Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to get started, and I'm going to ignore the typical Microsoft meeting rule of starting all of our meetings 5 to 10 minutes late, because I have a lot of content I want to share with you, and I want to make sure we get to make the most use of our time. So for those of you who are just trickling in, feel free to come in. My name is Anthony Cangelosi. I'm a program manager on the Visual Studio Extensibility team. My team is responsible for building the end-to-end experiences inside of Visual Studio for connecting with and consuming extensions, as well as the experiences for building extensions and the host platforms underneath. So we own some features that you may be familiar with if you've used them inside of Visual Studio, features like the Extension Manager in Visual Studio, the Online tab of the New Project Dialog. We own the Visual Studio SDK for building and creating extensions, as well as the host platform for hosting VS packages, as well as MEF components. Now, if you don't know what these are yet, don't worry, you're in the right place, because that's what we'll go through in this session. Now, before we begin, I want to get a sense of the audience. How many people in the audience have actually installed an extension for Visual Studio? Okay. Now, how many people have actually created or built your own extensions for Visual Studio? That's usually the right proportion. Okay. Now, how many of you have never done either of these two things? You're afraid to raise your hand. It's okay. Well, that's okay. You have some homework before we get started. Your homework assignment is to go into the visualstudiogallery.com website and install your first extension. And that's the only prerequisite that you need for this session. You'll be all caught up. Before I get into the actual contents of the session, I want to make sure that you understand a little bit about what we'll go through in the next hour and make sure it's the right content for you. I'll go through a little bit of the background of Visual Studio Extensibility and where we came from. We'll talk a little bit about working with extensions and how you use extensions within Visual Studio, and I'll cover some of the more advanced new features we've built into Visual Studio for working with and managing extensions. Then I'll get into the essence of building an extension for Visual Studio. We'll go through some of the basic core concepts of what you need to understand to build your own extensions. We'll actually build one here on stage, and I'll show you some of the popular extension points inside of our IDE. And then I'll review where and how you can deploy your extensions and which versions of Visual Studio will support those extensions and how you can promote those extensions online. Now, I won't be spending a lot of time going through the most popular extensions out there. I won't be installing many different extensions. It'll be more about the core requirements that you need to understand about building your own extensions. If you are interested in learning about some of those popular extensions, the Visual Studio Gallery at visualstudiogallery.com has a lot of useful lists and ranked community lists of the popular extensions, and I think I would trust the community more than even my own word about which are the most recommended ones. Now, I started on the Visual Studio team a long time ago working for a team called Visual Studio for Devices. Now, this team was responsible for bringing all of the .NET development capabilities down to the Windows mobile platform. This was before the Windows Phone generation and Windows Phone era. And it used to be that you had many different tools that you had to bring together into your development environment. So we were trying to create a consolidated tool in Visual Studio for both desktop and device development. Now, at that time, my team had the advantage of knowing all of the Visual Studio developers because they were sitting next to us in the hall. We also had the advantage of having access to all of the headers and libraries that you needed to build these extensions. Beyond our team, there were very few people in the world that had the ability to build extensions into Visual Studio. In order to get those rights, you used to have to get a membership within a program that Microsoft sponsored. You used to have to pay a license fee to become a member of that program, and you had to sign a license that signed much of your life away and potentially several of your children before we actually gave you the rights to actually extend for Visual Studio. And before we even gave you the keys to the kingdom, and there truly was a key you had to get for your extension to actually run and load inside of other versions of Visual Studio. And in the way that this model was set up, it left the challenges all up to you as the developers to figure out how you took together Visual Studio and many other independent tools that didn't integrate and how you take these different types of content and integrate them to solve your common problems. And so as you tried to figure out how you took your source code and your content information that you wanted to analyze with other tools, there was nobody there to help you with that process. Well, thankfully, we have come a long way in that experience, and we fundamentally changed how we approach and look at extensibility inside of Visual Studio. We're no longer an isolated island for extensibility. You no longer have to join any club or membership or pay any licensing fees to extend Visual Studio. It's something that's open to any developer who wants to approach and build on our IDE. And the only prerequisite that you actually need when you want to extend Visual Studio is you need to download the Visual Studio SDK. That's freely downloadable on the gallery. And with the SDK, you can build just about any type of extension for Visual Studio. From the most basic types, things like project templates that you use as a starting point for building an application, all the way to your own platform SDKs for either Windows or for other platforms as well. Really, any of these can be integrated into the Visual Studio IDE. Now, when I work at the extensibility booth out in the exhibit hall, one of the most common questions I get is not about extensible features inside of Visual Studio, but it's about whether or not you can even extend Visual Studio in the first place. And a lot of that comes from the history behind Visual Studio's extensibility. And so if there is one thing that you take away from this session, and I hope you take a lot more, but if there is truly only one thing that you take away, it is that you can extend Visual Studio with only downloading the SDK. And there are no prerequisites or requirements beyond the SDK for extending VS. So let's take a little bit more about the inner workings of actually using extensions within Visual Studio as a basis before we actually build our own. So the experience within Visual Studio for consuming extensions, actually, did you finish your homework? You did. OK, great. So the experience for consuming extensions in Visual Studio really starts with the Extension Manager. This is the starting point for consuming and using extensions inside of VS. It's the central view of all of the public extensions that are available on the visualstudiogallery.com. But the Extension Manager does a little bit more than just give you a feed of all that content that's available online. The Extension Manager actually filters that content down to show you only the specific extensions that work with your version of Visual Studio. So if you open up the Extension Manager today in Visual Studio 2012, the extensions you see there are specifically the extensions that were designed to work with that version of Visual Studio. Further, the Extension Manager filters it down to make sure that it's also the extensions that work with your edition of Visual Studio. Pro, Premium, and Ultimate have a varying set of features, all of which, or many of which, are extensible throughout the SKUs. And so we make sure the versions of extensions we show are the ones that work with your particular version and are compatible with your edition. So if they extend features from perhaps Ultimate, we're not showing those extensions in the Pro edition. Now, particularly for this audience, where we have a diverse community from many different regions and use many of our localized versions of Visual Studio, the Extension Manager also shows you both the versions that are localized for the language that you have loaded in Visual Studio, as well as the English extensions. So if you have the Italian or the French or the Spanish version of Visual Studio loaded, we'll show you the localized versions of extensions next to the English ones so that you get the specific content that you find most useful. Now, the Extension Manager, and I talk about it as the Extension Manager because that was the original name for the dialogue. It's actually now the Extensions and Update dialogue. The Extension Manager is the central place for V6 management. Now, when I say V6s, there are actually two different ways that extension authors can package up and ship their extensions. You can ship your extension as either an MSI, using the standard MSI technologies, and you're responsible for all the authoring and packaging up of the DLLs of where they need to be published within VS, or you can build them as a V6. And I'll get into more about how you build a V6, but a V6 is a much simpler way of packaging up an extension. The Extension Manager is the place where you manage either V6s or MSIs. It used to be that you could only manage V6s within Visual Studio, but we've actually expanded the Extension Manager to be able to manage any type of extension within the Extension Manager. And this gives us the ability to push out some of the new capabilities, like update notifications. And so within the Extension Manager, you can get update notifications for all of the extensions that you have installed, no matter how they were packaged and deployed. Now, behind the Extension Manager, Visual Studio and many of its features run under a set of services. And the Extension Manager is no exception. The Extension Manager has a fundamental set of services that are available for an extender to use to consume within their extensions themselves. And if you're asking why would you want to actually consume the Extension Manager services, it's for creating some what we would call in situ or context-specific experiences. A good example of this is if you go to the new project dialog when you're creating your new projects. It has an online tab. Now, in that online tab, we're surfacing the same exact content that's available in the Extension Manager. But we filter the content there to be the specific types of content that are relevant in that context of your development. And so we only show project templates in the new project dialog. If you go to the add item dialog, we eliminate all the extensions except for the item templates there. So again, you're only seeing a subset of the content on our Visual Studio Gallery that is relevant to the context that you're in your experience. And this is available for extensions to be able to query and find a specific set of extensions that might be relevant or content that you might want to load within your own extension. Now, when we connected Visual Studio through the Extension Manager into the Visual Studio Gallery, there was a lot of excitement from individual developers who were able to get access to many of the community extensions that were being built for Visual Studio. But we created a lot of havoc for development managers. Who in the office is actually a manager of teams of developers? Okay, not too many. So only a few of you would we have upset by the fact that, well, there was no way to actually manage which versions of an extension you could publish out to your users. We also got a lot of feedback about the fact that teams wanted to be able to manage a subset of extensions that were only relevant or internal to their teams. And the only way to share that out in any kind of connected fashion was to put them on the Visual Studio Gallery. So several of our large partners came to us and said, well, can you give us all the source code for the entire Visual Studio Gallery website? And, well, unfortunately, doing that was going to pull the yarn out of a big ball of yarn and bring most of MSDN with it. We didn't ever design that website to be a modular component. So we went back and we took this feedback for 2012, and we expanded the Visual Studio Extension Manager to be able to consume more than just the Visual Studio Gallery's content through a notion called private galleries. And so now you can actually plug in your own private internal galleries into Visual Studio to publish a subset of extensions for your teams. Now, you can publish these galleries on internal websites using either of two different endpoints. You can create your own Atom feeds to publish extensions into our Extension Manager, or you can create SharePoint lists with some customized properties that expose the properties that the Extension Manager is looking for to host those extensions in our Extension Manager. So with that, let me actually take you through a walkthrough of what it's like to actually add a private gallery into Visual Studio. So here we have the Extensions and Update dialog, or synonymous what I call the Extension Manager. And it has much of the same design from 2010. It has the installed content filtered by the different types of extensions that you can consume. It has your online content, which is not connected to the internet and should be. Let me do that right now real quick. Oops. Sorry about that. Restart VS. Tools. Okay, success. Sorry about that little interruption. Okay. Okay, so now we actually have online content, now that I'm connected to the network. And so here we're showing all the content that's available online on the public Visual Studio Gallery. And then finally, we have the updates content, which pulls in updates for each of those particular galleries, as well as product updates for the Visual Studio product, all from the same experience. Now, let's add our own gallery into that experience by going into the Tools Options dialog. From Tools Options, we can now add additional extension galleries directly from within Visual Studio. I'm going to give my gallery name and my gallery its own name. We call it our Team Blue Gallery. And then now I can point this Team Blue Gallery to any particular endpoint that I have in my enterprise. I can point it to a website where I might have an Atom feed or a SharePoint list. I can also point it to a public file share that I have internal or to any particular file location. So I don't have any SharePoint lists here internal on site, so I'm going to point it to a local file gallery that I have on my own personal machine. So I can take the path from that folder path that I have. And this would be the same as if you were pointing to a public file share. And you give it a pointer to the XML file that's created that contains all of the Atom content for that particular gallery. Now that I've applied that, I should be able to see that gallery appear inside of my Extension Manager. Going back to the Extension Manager in the Online tab, I now have a new top-level node that I can access. Now, this top-level node is showing me only the contents that's available on that particular private gallery. But this private gallery has all the same features that I had before. I can expand out private and organize my content by categories. I can get metadata about my extensions. I can also search for my online extensions. Installing an extension from my private gallery is the same experience as it would be from installing from the Visual Studio Gallery. So here I'm installing an extension that you can actually get online. This is the Highlight All Occurrences extension, which will help me demo some of the code that I'll be showing you on screen. I'm going to go ahead and restart VS. Now that I've restarted VS, that extension will appear inside of the Extension Manager as a managed extension that I have available. I can uninstall it if it's troublesome, or I can disable it if I don't particularly need it. Now I want to try and troubleshoot to see if this is a problematic extension. Visual Studio will track which extensions I have installed, and then updates for any of the extensions that are published through my private gallery appear here in the Updates tab. And when I go to build my own extension in just a few minutes, we'll actually publish our own update through the private gallery. So we'll save that for just a minute. So let's talk a little bit about building extensions for Visual Studio. One of the things I like about working the booths here at TechEd is you get to practice your skills as a salesman. And when I get some of the tough questions, like why to build extensions for Visual Studio, you do what any good salesman would do, and you answer the question with your own question. And so when I get this question about why to build extensions, I ask developers, well, do you build products the same way that all other developers do? And the answer to that is usually no. Each of us are unique about how we bring together information into building the applications that we have. And many of the applications have unique requirements and different types of content that needs to be synergized into the development of your application, outside context that you need to bring together. And so Visual Studio's extensibility gives you the ability to customize the environment in a way that allows you to keep all of that information at your fingertips and at hand within the IDE without having to have any of those outside context switches. Extensibility also gives teams some flexibility around creating policy guidelines around how teams contribute code into their team. One of the most common ways of doing this is by building project templates with inside of the new project dialog. You can use project templates to define a set of references, common libraries, and consistent code patterns that you want your team to use so that your team is building consistent code throughout the organization. Another popular way of creating policies throughout teams is by using things like TFS's check-in policies, so that you as a development manager can create rules about what you define as done for the code that gets checked into your repositories. Now, who here has actually installed specifically an extension that is a refactoring tool, like, say, ReSharper from JetBrains or Telerik? Yes, they're extremely popular extensions. Now, I heard a statistic once that developers spend about as much time writing new code as they do iteratively refining the code that they've written. And so tools like these are specifically designed to reduce the iterative and the repetitive work that you spend building applications. Building your own custom extensions around Visual Studio helps with that process to help you create some of you, eliminate some of your own repetition to build code faster and more higher quality. And then the last one is kind of a cheeky, fun aspect about one of the unique side effects that's come out of opening up extensibility and connecting it to developers, and that is really a lot of us have unique ideas about how we would love to see Visual Studio behave differently. How many of you have provided suggestions to Microsoft about how you would like to see Visual Studio do something different? Yep. And you've probably had ideas about how you think we could do a better job with our IDE. Now, some of those suggestions do come in and do get taken in, but not all of them do. And so the gallery is given an opportunity for community members to take those suggestions online and share them out with other developers. And it turns out some of those ideas were really good. So good, actually, that they've become the most popular extensions on the Visual Studio Gallery. And it's been great to see over the last release cycle that community extensions that were built that never existed before in the Dev 10 release cycle have actually become, have turned from community-free extensions into paid, profitable extensions that individual developers have been able to build a business around. And I've seen some of these community members actually become members of our VSIP program, where they're now taking advantage of marketing benefits and really getting to promote the success of their extensions. So there really is a lot of opportunity to take your ideas about how you might want to change or morph the IDE into something that others can benefit from as well. Now, Visual Studio's extensibility goes pretty far and wide. This is just a small subset of the map of the different ways that you can build extensions into Visual Studio. Just about every single feature inside or every part of Visual Studio's IDE has some notion about lighting up and expanding the capabilities that are there so that you can flexibly change what is available inside of our IDE. Now, I won't be going through all of these extension points. We have entire conferences that are focused on some of the different pivots and aspects here. But I want you to look at this, and when you go back to this eye chart, when you review the sessions later, to look at some of the different ways that you might be able to manipulate Visual Studio. Now, you don't need all of these capabilities to build your first extension. There's only a couple of key highlights that we'll go through, the key concepts that you'll need to build your first extensions. Before you start building an extension, you need to understand a little bit about what makes up the extensions you want to create. I see a lot of developers get tripped up early on in their development of an extension as they try to rationalize some of the features they see inside of Visual Studio that they want to replicate or emulate. So if you look at features like, say, the toolbox, or if you look at the property window and the solution explorer, while each of these are three very different features that behave very differently inside of Visual Studio, they are fundamentally built on the same common extension point in Visual Studio. Each of these are just a tool window inside of Visual Studio's IDE. They have different attributes and properties about how they behave slightly differently from others, but each of them fundamentally is the same extension point. When you look at the document area, where you can see either a designer or an editor for the XML, the XAML designers, our Visual Studio editors, and a number of others, all of these are hosted inside of what's known as a document window. Again, a common extension point that all of these extensions share. Those refactoring tools that I talked about, the productivity tools that are out there, focus a lot of their extensibility within Visual Studio through our Visual Studio Editor. They'll create margins along the outer edges of the Visual Studio Editor to give you a visual understanding of code that they're changing or indexing information throughout your source file. They'll actually set adornments on the surface layer of the Visual Studio Editor, or UI elements that they place on top of the surface to give you information about that code or give you the controls to change or modify your code. And they set tags and classifiers throughout your source base to be able to modify and manipulate the code throughout the solution. A programming language is at its heart consistent across all programming languages, which is really just a project system, a language service to describe that language, some basic templates to get you started, and the build tasks that explain to the compiler how to understand the assets that are inside of that project system. And then a platform SDK, if you look at, say, the Windows Phone platform SDK for Windows Phone 7 development that you can download as an extension to Visual Studio, is really just a roll-up of all of these ideas brought into one. It has its own project flavors. It has its own code productivity tools and its own tool windows that it brings together into a single project for platform development. So when you get started going down the path of building your first extension, there are three core concepts that you need to understand that will help you build your first extension. The first one is understanding what is a V6. Now, it used to be when you built, or when our users would consume extensions for Visual Studio, we would get a lot of feedback, as a polite way of saying complaint mail, about how unreliable it is to consume or take extensions into Visual Studio. If they were trying out a new extension and it didn't work, it would leave Visual Studio in a completely unusable state, so much so that you might have to rebuild the IDE to get back to a working state. We got the same complaint from our extension authors, many of our ISVs, saying that it's too difficult to build extensions for Visual Studio. There are too many custom locations, registry keys, configuration files that you need to set before you have the ingredients to actually package up and deploy that extension. And so we took a step back from MSIs and said we could do better than MSIs in terms of how we approach and package up extensions that Visual Studio will consume. And so we looked and we took advantage of a technology inside of Windows called OPC. And if you don't know what OPC is, OPC is a glorified version of WinZip, or zip files. Except these zip files that we use and take advantage of have their own custom file extension. So our custom file extension is a .vsix file. And inside of that custom zip file is a manifest that describes its contents. That's at its heart what an OPC file is. Now, by taking advantage of this, we're able to create a very simple, lightweight, X-copy deployable package for shipping extensions. These V6s can be localized into any of the supported VS languages or other languages as well. They're extensible. You can add your own content as well as your own XML metadata in there to describe additional contents inside. And by having an atomic unit that represents that extension, we can introduce some of the functionality around managing extensions that we couldn't do before. Gives us the ability to turn on and off extensions because we understand all of the assets that belong to the extensions that you're shipping inside of your V6. We've expanded V6s to not just support the V6s itself, but to give some tie-ins into MSIs as well, so that MSIs can take advantage of some of the inherent core advantages that you get with V6s. Things like update notification, as well as dependency resolution between extensions. And within the SDK itself, the SDK gives you the tooling that you need to simplify the packaging and building of a V6. So you don't have to worry about understanding how you create these. We take care of that for you, and all you do is you set some metadata attributes. Now, the second important concept, actually, before we go to the second one, let's actually take a look at a V6 here and see what actually belongs inside of a V6. So I'm going to go to that private gallery that I have set up, and I'm going to open up one of the extensions that I installed earlier, the selection highlight extension. I'm going to make a copy of it here. And as I said, this is really just a zip file at its heart. So I can take this and I can rename it to a .zip. And in doing so, I now have a package that I can open up and I can see the contents of the inside of my V6. Now, perhaps other extension developers may not want you knowing this, but the truth is you can go to any extension that packages a V6, download it, rename it, and understand how it's been organized and packaged up. So you can learn from that as well. V6s have a few common elements in them. All V6s are going to have a content types XML file that is there to describe to Windows what the types of assets are, types of files that you have inside of this V6, so it knows how to export them and expand them into the OS. They'll also have some metadata elements to them, some preview images, as well as some license text. It'll have the payload, or the actual extension that we're going to load, the assembly that we're going to load into Visual Studio will always be there. And then most importantly, we'll have this extension V6 manifest. Now, this extension V6 manifest is what describes to Visual Studio the extension that we're about to load. It gives Visual Studio some basic information about the extension that we have, its version number so it can determine whether you have the latest version on your machine. It also defines which supported versions of Visual Studio this extension is designed to integrate with. In addition to that, it also supports a notion of dependencies. So you can actually create dependencies and prerequisites on things like the .NET framework or even on other V6s that you may need to have on the machine before your extension would work. And then finally, there's a payload, or the contents, or the assets section. And this describes to Visual Studio the extensions that we're going to load into the IDE. And it's through this that Visual Studio determines how to do all of that registration that was originally left up to the extension author. Now, in addition to the common elements that you find inside of any V6, you can also ship your own supporting files along with them. So into that zip file, whatever you put into that zip file will expand out and install into a common location or a private location on side of the user's machine. So you can also ship your own contents, your own supporting files, databases perhaps, a local database perhaps, or other assemblies that you might need to query into. And then using the Extension Manager services, you can ask for a location for where we've installed those, and then call up any of those particular assets or supporting files that you might want to ship with your extensions. Now, the second concept that's important as you go down and build your first extension is understanding what a VS package is. Now, VS packages are the primary extensibility point inside of Visual Studio. There are other ways to extend the IDE. You may have heard of things like VS add-ins, as a simple way of building extensions for Visual Studio. There used to be a time where there wasn't a lot of information available about VS packages. Historically, they came a little bit later in terms of availability for the public to consume, and so there were fewer samples, there was fewer documentation about it, and the tooling wasn't as robust for building packages. That has come up to the point where I would say that we are comparable and arguably the same as building a VS add-in, and it is the fundamental same technology that the Visual Studio team uses to build the capabilities that we ship inside of Visual Studio. And so I generally recommend for anybody who's beginning to build new extensions to start by building a Visual Studio package. Because most of the Shell's IDE is exposed through extending a Visual Studio package. When you look at the menu system in the top left, or even the toolbar, both of those capabilities are exposed as a VS package. And they have a command that sits behind them, also implemented in a package. Those two windows I talked about earlier, the property window, the toolbox, and the solution explorer, each of these also implemented and delivered through a package, as well as the document well, also shipped as a VS package as its core fundamental capability. And it has the flexibility to really take advantage of all the extension points within Visual Studio, whereas VS add-ins will run into some limitations that you won't be able to expand beyond as you want to get more robust with your extensions you build. Now, at the heart of a VS package, it is built on a COM architecture for Visual Studio. It was originally built around native code, but you shouldn't get scared away by that, because we've built a set of managed wrappers around VS packages to make them more approachable to a managed developer. And the extension that I'm about to start building in just a moment will actually be built entirely in C# through managed code to show you that it is just as possible to do when we provide the templates and the tools to build managed extensions for VS. Now, the third and last concept that I encourage you to understand as you begin building your extensions is MEF, or the Managed Extensibility Framework. If you've already started to think about some ideas about how you might want to start changing Visual Studio, you've probably started to think a little bit about the editor as a popular place where you can think about visualizing new information inside of our IDE. And the editor was built and redesigned using MEF as its extensibility model, as a new and emerging extensibility model within .NET. And if you don't know what MEF is it gives you a lightweight library that is consistent across all .NET applications for creating an extensible application. It eliminates a lot of the contracts and composition and configuration that you need to define up front between a host application and extension, and abstracts that away so that you have a consistent way of defining extensibility between an extension and a host application. It takes care of all of the component discoverability through composition for the host application so that the application doesn't have to worry about doing that. And by separating itself so that the framework manages that interface, it allows two extensions to actually be able to talk to each other so that the host application doesn't have to define upfront a mechanism by which two different extensions can expose capabilities between each other. Because MEF, at its fundamental layer, creates that ability to interoperate and expose or export capabilities that another extension can consume. Now, with that, you can abstract that one layer further and you can actually create reusable components that are shared by two different extensions for two different applications that might have a common service that need to be shared between them. And it allows you to create much more reusable and factored code that you don't have to rewrite or repackage with two different extensions. Now, there's a lot to MEF, and there's a couple of sessions that you can attend that go into depth about MEF. But for the purposes of extending VS, there are a couple of three concepts that kind of surface themselves when you're building an extension. One is the notion of a catalog. And the catalog is your collection of all of the extensions that are available for Visual Studio to load, where the MEF components will take care of matching up all of the imports and exports that match up for that extension. Then there's the notion of imports and exports. Now, imports and exports are how you define the capabilities that you're providing out to the host application and taking back into your IDE. And the simplest way to think about imports and exports is when you see an export is something that you as the extension writer are exposing or exporting out to the host application. And imports can be thought of as something that you are bringing in or a service that you're taking in or a property that you want to consume from the host application within your extension. So with that now, actually, let's go and build our own extension for Visual Studio. I'm going to close this old extension manifest that I had open. I'm going to go into the new project dialog. Now, the extension that I want to build is an expansion of a feature that we're shipping in Visual Studio 2012. In Visual Studio 2012, there is a new top-level node of content that you can consume within the new project dialog called samples. These samples are fed from the MSDN Code Gallery site. It's a public site where you can publish or download samples directly from online. And they're available as a starting point for you to build applications on top of or to learn about new technologies right from within Visual Studio. Now, I want to take these samples out of the new project dialog and make them available within the editor so that wherever I am in my editing, in the code that I'm editing, I can find samples that match the currently selected word that I have in the editor. So let's go in and begin building that extension. To start out, I have already installed the Visual Studio SDK, that only prerequisite that you need to build extensions for Visual Studio. And with that SDK, I get some new project templates to build extensions. This extensibility node gets added in with the ability to add in new packages, some project templates, as well as editor text adornments. So I'm going to go ahead and add in my own adornment here. I'm going to call it my sample list. Now, what an adornment is from the perspective of the editor is it is a visual UI element that we put on top of the editor surface. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a list of the samples that I get from querying a service online and publish that list box onto the surface of the editor as my own adornment. So this solution gives me a couple of basic assets that are important for starting out my project. First, it gives me my sample list factory, which is what will export or expose all of my capabilities out to Visual Studio. This sample list CS file that it creates for me is the UI class for my extension. And it also provides a V6 manifest so that the extension that gets created is immediately packaged into its own V6. Now, what I'm about to do is I'm actually going to bring together a couple of different extension points into my extension. And whenever you have more than one extension point, I generally recommend that as you're building your extension, you create a separate project to manage the deployment of your extension. And so while we give you a V6 here out of the box for the project templates, I'm actually going to add in a separate V6 that's going to manage the deployment of my project. So I can go back and select a V6 project here and call it my sample list V6. And now that's created a new project in my solution with its own V6 manifest. You can for now ignore the existing V6 manifest, or you can delete it to clean up your project later. And that V6 manifest has a new designer that helps simplify the creating and the properties that you need to set in that V6. So all that XML that I showed you earlier from that example of a V6 I cracked open, you don't have to customize that directly. You can actually modify it directly within the designer. So let's give it a useful name, call it our sample list. Now the product ID is what globally and uniquely identifies my extension from all the extensions out there in the world. And it's a prerequisite that you need if you're going to ship your extension into the Visual Studio Gallery in order for us to be able to uniquely identify your extension from any other that's out there. The designer also gives me feedback for required fields to make sure that I have all the requirements for correctly publishing my V6, and then it'll also give me build task or build feedback if I have errors in my project. The version number is what we'll use to define whether or not we have a new updated version. Now, the install targets is where I define which versions of Visual Studio my extension is designed to work with. I can build an extension that targets many different versions of Visual Studio from the same package. And so you can ship an extension that may target just from 11 up until but less than 12, or you can target, you can build an extension that works from 11 all the way up until less than 13 and define your own ranges. The assets are the payload that you're shipping with your extension. And so here I'm going to add in that project, that sample list project that I created, as a new MEF component that I want to ship inside of this v6. And then finally, if I had any dependencies that I required that were on the box, I can define a dependency here and provide a hint URL so that when Visual Studio tries to install it, if the dependency isn't found, Visual Studio will tell the user where to go and find that dependency and install it before you install your extension. Now, the last thing I'm going to do is I'm going to tell Visual Studio I want to set this as my startup project so that when it runs the extension, it runs this particular v6. Now, the v6 project will take care of importing all of those dependencies that I defined as references and then build up and package the v6 so you don't have to do that. Now, let's get back into the coding of my extension. First, I need to add in a few references that I'll need to build my extension. The first reference I'm going to add is to the Extension Manager DLL, which is what gives me the Extension Manager services I'll need to query the online galleries that are connected to Visual Studio. Also, I'm going to add some references to the shell, which I need to get some helper libraries, as well as the Olay and IRAP assemblies, which are needed as well. Now, a little known useful feature in the new extension manager, or sorry, in the new reference manager here, when you add references, you can select multiple items by just doing shifts and checking them off the box. It used to be that you'd have to have them all available in the same list or click OK and move in and out. We actually preserve all of that for you now, and you can just add them in, and they all get added together at one time. So let's go into the sample list factory, that factory class. Now, let's take a look at what's been created for me. First, I need to add in a using statement for the references that I've just added. And what the template has given me here is it's given me a basic MEF component. This MEF component is exporting a set of capabilities from my extension out to the Visual Studio Editor. It's saying that my extension is a text view creation listener, so that whenever a new text view, and what a text view is from the perspective of the editor is a view of code that you see on the screen or an editor instance, every time a new text view is created, I want it to call into my class and I want it to notify me about that text view being created so I can take a reference and an instance to that view. Now, my extension may not work with all types of content, so we have attributes that are available to define the scope of when your extension should be loaded. Now, it's generally a good idea to be as lazy about loading your extension as possible because it helps improve the overall performance of Visual Studio. And so you can define the types of content that you want your extension associated with. You can think of your content types as a hierarchy, where text is probably the most general type of content that it can appear in our Visual Studio Editor, but then it can get more specific. So if you have an extension that only works with the Visual Basic language, you can set it to only work with the VB language. Well, I want my extension to be specifically scoped to only code content, so we ignore any text that happens to be on the screen. Now, the next way that you can filter the application of your extension is through its text role. Now, the text view role defines what properties or capabilities that particular view has. Is this an editor that happens to be editable? Is it read-only? Is it debuggable? In our case, I want to associate my extension with anything that has the properties of a document. And from the perspective of the editor, a document is considered to be anything that has text that is saved out to its own file. Now, the second capability that it's already exporting for me is it's given me my own adornment layer. Within the editor that you're seeing here, there's actually many different layers of content that are being composed together to present the view of what you see in the editor. There's a base layer that is the text itself, but there are also additional layers that represent selection, IntelliSense, and other visual elements that you see on the screen. And I'm going to create my own layer here so that I can control where my UI shows up relative to the contents in the editor. I give it a name so I can reference it later, and then I define the order here by saying that I want my editor extension and my adornment layer to appear above and after the text on the screen so it doesn't get obscured by the text. Now that I've modified all my exports, I need to import some capabilities. I need a service that's going to come from the Visual Studio Editor. I need an ability to actually navigate through the code. And so the editor gives me a service called the Text Structure Navigator Selector Service that I can use to import and acquire an object that'll let me move around the code inside of that text view. And so by calling that Text Structure Navigator Selector, I can get an instance of an object based on the text view's buffer. Now, to take a step back for a minute here, I mentioned that the text view was the UI composition of what you see in your editor. Associated with every view is a specific buffer. That buffer contains all the text or the data that's relative to that particular editor's view. And so this navigator allows me to have an object that controls structured movement around that particular buffer. And then I'll pass that on to my UI class that I have already created. So let's go ahead and now modify the UI class. Now this template, the way it's created just out of the box, will put a box or a little red box that outlines all the letter A's that appear inside of my editor. Now that's interesting as a demo to understand what it does, but I need to change this to do my own presentation. So I'm going to remove the code that comes with this template, and I'm going to start to add my own. First, I'll add some using statements that represent the references I took earlier. And then let's start looking at some of the global variables that I need to manage, specifically those that are relevant to editor's extensibility. And I'm going to gloss over some of the topics that are specific to this unique demo and just really focus on those objects that are relevant to the editor. First is that text view that I talked about. This is the pointer to that view of the currently selected editor. The text buffer represents the buffer of data that sits behind that editor, because there's a clear separation between the data or the model view, the model, and the view components of our particular editor. Now, the third object is interesting here is I need to manage a pointer to the currently selected word within my editor. I want to track the current word because I need to query for that word online and determine if there are any samples that match that word. Now, when you work with content within our buffer, well, you don't actually work with strings within our buffer, as you might originally assume. We create what are called snapshots of the buffer. These snapshots are version snapshots of the contents in the buffer at a particular point in time. Many different snapshots are created over the history of a particular text editor's view. Those snapshots give you an immutable object that you can take a reference to and work with without having to worry about managing locks to the strings that you might need to manipulate or change, or that may be changing under you. And so you work with a particular snapshot in time of that text buffer, and then a snapshot span, what that maintains is it contains a location within an existing snapshot, as well as a length that defines a range in that snapshot that you need to work with. With that, it then provides helper methods that let you get the text for that particular snapshot when you need to actually work with the string directly. I have my iText structure navigator that does my movement, my dormant layer, and then a list of all the results that I get from my online query. Now, my sample list constructor here is relatively basic. I take in some elements that came from my constructor, and then I use the get a dormant layer method off of my view to get the dormant layer that represents the one that I exported from my sample list factory. The last thing I'm going to do here in my constructor is add a couple of methods that are going to handle the layout changes and the position changes. Now, the position change is relatively simplistic. It's whenever I move a caret around the screen, I'll get a position change event. Layouts happen a little more aggressively, though. Layout changes happen whenever the editor is expanded or minimized, whenever the text is scrolled within the text view, a layout change will occur, as well as when I add new lines or change the actual text within the buffer. So I can use the events new snapshot as well as old snapshot to see whether or not there's a change that's relevant to me finding and doing a new search. So I scope my searches to only be relevant to when there is a new snapshot or my snapshot has changed over time. In other words, when the actual text buffer underneath it has changed. Here, the update at caret position is my do work method. This can be any of the functionality that you might be doing in the editor relative to the UI adornment that you have on the screen. So what my update caret position here is going to do is each time we define a new event handled for the caret position changing, I need to change that visual element, which is the character inside of the view, or sorry, the caret inside of the view. I need to translate that to a position inside of my text buffer. And so the editor gives you a method to help get that particular point. And so remember, your buffer is represented by snapshots. And so this get point method will translate that caret position relative to a particular snapshot point inside of your buffer. I then do a little bit of checking to make sure that my caret is moved to a new interesting place. So if I move my caret within the same word, I don't do multiple searches for the same word. And once I know I've gotten a new interesting location within my text buffer, I can use that text structured navigator to navigate through the code and get what's called the extent of a word. Now, the extent of a word is defined as the beginning of an ending of a word relative to the content in that editor, defined by either spaces or special characters. And the host of the editor gets to define exactly what is the range or extent of a word. So you can control this in some very unique and interesting ways. That navigator also gives you ways to move around different relative points to a current selection. So you can find the parent of a particular word, or the sibling, or the length, or the string of a particular word. Now, I need to see if that word is significant with respect to my extension, so I'm going to see if there's any characters in the word that I've selected. And then once I have a particularly unique word, I have a method that is my get samples list, or that will do my online query call to get the samples that'll come down. And it'll take that snapshot span that I created earlier, and use the getText method to get the actual string that represents that point in my buffer location. Once I have a list of samples that match, I'm going to display it onto the screen. So here's that getListSample or getSamplesList method. And what's most notable or interesting here is I talked about the Extension Manager services for quite a bit. And one of the capabilities that you can use in the Extension Manager services is to query the online content that it knows about. And so using the service provider, which is a helper API inside of Visual Studio, I can get an instance of a service that that manages all of that sample repository. The sample repository is an online source of content. From that, I can build a query, define the order of the content that I want to see, organized by its ranking, define a subset of how many I wanted to show me in a list, and then execute that query and return the results. Once I have a set of results that I want to display on the screen, I can do my visual presentation. First, I use my adornment layer to clear out all of the existing adornments that are on the screen. I want to get rid of any of the junk that I have on my layer and start with a fresh view. I then need to find out where I want to place that adornment on the editor view. And I can use one of the helper methods to actually get a location of where the current word is by identifying a geometry object, just a basic .NET geometry object, to see where that word is that I have selected relative to the current editor's location. And that'll give me a pixel location of that word so that the list box object that I'm creating can be set relative to the bottom right of that particular word. With my location set, I fill up my text box with all of the samples that I found in my list. And then I add that list box into my adornment layer using the add adornment method. So with that, I think I've captured all the code that I need to show here, and I've got build success, so we're great. So let me run my extension. Now, if my extension doesn't work, I could have a lot of trouble if I start to run that extension inside of my working version of Visual Studio. So with the SDK, we add in the capability to create what are called experimental instances of Visual Studio. And what an experimental instance gives you is it gives you an isolated, safe place where you can have your own settings, your own configurations, and you can deploy the extensions that you're testing and building without affecting your current development environment. You can imagine if this extension failed to load and it was installed into my working instance, how troublesome it would be to try and pull this thing out and recover myself from that. So we give you a working space that you can do safe changes and test your extension. So now let's see if my extension actually loads up when I load up a project and solution here. And if I move around the code, I should be able to select an instance here. Hopefully we have a working internet connection. And I can see samples that are online that match the currently selected word. And so here I'm getting a list box of all those items that are online, except I'm doing a little bit aggressively here. Every time I move around the editor, I do a search online, and I get those samples. And with those samples, I can actually pick one of the samples, and it'll start up a new instance of IE. I can browse the code online. And then once I find a sample I like, I can download it and continue working with it. OK, so this sample is ready for me to ship version 1 to my customer. So let's actually take the sample and publish it out. Now, the only thing that you need to grab when you're publishing your extension is that v6 that you created earlier. That v6 is one of the debug outputs for your project outputs. And it's already picked up all of the dependencies that you defined or the assets you defined for your extension. So I'm going to grab this v6 here. And now I could take this v6 and I could upload it directly to the Visual Studio Gallery. And if I did so, I'd probably get in trouble with my boss because they don't like you shipping demo code online to the public. So instead, I'm going to publish it out to my private gallery. And to do that, I'm going to put it inside of that private gallery here, inside of the coding folder next to the other extensions that I have. I just copy it over. And then the last thing I need to do is I need to update that Atom feed to tell the Atom feed that it has some new extensions to publish out. Now, the Atom file here follows all the standard conventions for an Atom file. We try to reuse many of the existing properties that are already standard inside of Atom so that you can use a lot of the standard libraries that are there to automate the process of building your own Atom feeds for the extensions that you want to publish internally. So I'm going to take one of the existing entries that I have here and create a copy of it. And with that copy now, I'm going to modify the properties to represent the extension that I'm about to ship. Oh, actually, I'm doing this inside of the experimental instance, which is why it's so slow. Let's actually close that down and go back to here. I'll open up this private gallery. OK, so I've got my entry here. Let me go ahead and create a copy of this entry. Now I have a copy. Let me go ahead and replace the ID here and some of the properties in this entry to represent the extension that I'm about to deploy. And to get that, first I need to get the ID for my extension, which is that globally unique ID that was created for me. I apply that to my ID property here, replace all the ID values. And then I'm going to give it a new unique useful name, call it our sample list. Don't care here much about the description because this is going to be our own extension. And then I need to change the path, the relative. Oh, sorry, I copied an MSI version of that. There's slightly different properties that you need for publishing an MSI versus a V6. So I want to make sure I copy the V6 version of it. And again, I'm going to change my ID to represent the ID for my extension. So I've changed the ID. Let me give it a new descriptive name. Call it our sample list. Get rid of this description we don't need. And then I need to change the relative location of where my extension lives. So this was originally pointing to the search highlight extension. I want this to point to my sample list V6. Change the ID here one more time. And then I need to set my version number to match the version of my V6, which is 1.0. So I have my property set here. If I go back to the Tools, Extensions, and Updates dialog, let's go into the online Team Blue gallery, I see that I have a new extension available in this gallery. And so all I had to do was update that XML file to get it to appear. Now I can install this extension, and it follows the same behavior that I had before. When I install the extension, it'll be available, and any of the source that I change should actually now do that search online to find relative words that match the current selection. Now, I'm doing this a little aggressively. Every time I move my carrot around the screen, I'm doing another search online, which is obviously going to slow down any of my work inside of my editor. So I need to improve this version 1 of my extension to create a second version that instead of doing a search every time I click inside of the editor, to move that work off to its own menu command so that only when the user clicks the request for a search do we actually do the online search call. So I can disable this troublesome extension that I've created right here. I can go and I can disable it. So I keep the extension loaded inside of Visual Studio, but it's not actually enabled, so none of the extensions get loaded into the IDE. And I can start moving around and start changing my code again. Okay, so let's go ahead and add that menu command into my IDE. First, I need to add in what's known as a VS package. And I can go back to my projects and create a new project for that. And let's call this our sample menu command. The VS package will give you a wizard that walks you through the creation of a VS package. You can choose any of the languages that you want to build your extensions in that you're comfortable with, the metadata that goes into your package as well, and then you can define which extension point inside of Visual Studio you want to consume. Here I need to use a menu command, and I'm going to give my menu its own name, call it our find samples command, and I'm going to remove these unit tests. Although they're useful, they're going to slow down my project creation for the demo, so I'm going to remove them. But what those unit tests give you is it gives you a way to actually test your extension in a build environment without having VS loaded or installed, and it gives you some mock objects that you can use to test the functionality in your extension. Now that I've created my sample menu command project, I need to tell that V6 project that there's a new asset that it needs to deploy. So let's go back to that V6 manifest. And inside of that V6 manifest, I need to go to my assets tab and add that as a new asset. This time I'm going to select a VS package and then point it at the sample menu command package that's in my solution. The other thing I want to change in my V6 is I want to upgrade my version number. Because this is how Visual Studio is going to detect that there's actually a newer version to notify users that, that you can update for your extension. Now I have my deployment package ready to go. There's one last little property I need to set on the project for my MEF component. The packages that get created with Visual Studio have a template setting that were defaulted to have code strong name signing turned on by default. And so the two different project templates I've used, one is signed and the other one isn't, but you can't deploy two projects that are not both signed or both unsigned. So I need to go and grab a reference to that strong name key so that my projects will actually build and deploy together. Now that I have that set, we can get back into the fun of coding my actual extension. All right, let's add some references that I'll need inside of my menu command. In this case, I'm going to need to take a reference to Visual Studio's text manager, which is in the Visual Studio editor assembly. This is what gives me the ability to query for and identify the views that are, or which different editors happen to be loaded in the IDE. The next item that I'm going to take a reference to is specifically to an instance of the Visual Studio editor, which is the new editor that we rebuilt in Visual Studio 2010. Now that I've got my references set, let me add some using statements for those particular assemblies. And then also I need to take one last reference. I need to take a reference from this VS package over to that MEF component that I created earlier, which has all that UI for my editor extension. Okay, so the project templates created a lot of the configuration that you need for building a VS package. So this has been abstracted away, and what it does is it puts a menu item onto the tools menu. You can change these properties to put that menu just about anywhere inside of the VS IDE, and we've created a lot of verbose comments to help you understand how to change those properties and modify them to move those commands around. Now, within my command, I need to change the callback method. This is the function call that gets called each time that menu is clicked. The default template puts up a message box each time it's clicked, and I want to change this to instead do my web service call. So I need to remove this code here and call an execute method inside of my sample factory. Before I can call my particular MEF component, I need to identify from that menu command which of the editors happens to be the current one that has focus. So that's where I get an instance of our text manager service. That's what allows me to have an object that can get the currently active view that has focus with the user. If the currently visible editor, and there are many different types of editors, both Visual Studio's editor and custom editors that can load up into the IDE, if it's Visual Studio's editor, it can be casted to this VS user data type. And through that data type, you can export and get specifically an instance of that text view that we were using in our MEF component earlier. Once I have a reference to that view, I can pass it off to my sample list factory class. That was the extension that we exported into the editor, and call a new execute method that I'm going to add now. So let's go ahead and add in that execute method. So here, this execute method is going to, instead of creating a new instance of our UI class every single time, we're going to create a singleton object. And we're going to get that instance of that singleton relative to that instance of the editor. And then from that UI object, we're going to call that update at caret position, or my do work function for my particular extension. I'm also going to modify now, and instead of creating a new instance of the editor each time, or of the UI class, I'm just going to create and use a create method to create that singleton object. And then the default template gives me internal objects, so I need to make this public so that it's accessible from that other assembly that I'm calling it from. Now, the last set of changes I need to make are inside of my UI class for my MEF component. So I have my UI class here. As I've said, we're building a singleton at this point, so we no longer need to have a public constructor. We're going to create a private constructor here. We'll add our new create method that we have. And what this create method is using the view to add properties onto the view of the editor. And it's adding onto the properties of the editor an instance of this sample list object, but only one if one doesn't exist, or getting a reference to it if one already does exist from a previous call into the editor. The last thing I want to change is I want to remove that troublesome code that I had that was doing calls out to the editor every time. And instead of doing a work function each time, I'm just going to clear out the editor adornment layer using the remove all adornments and clear out any of the UI that was there so that whenever I do a position change, we just clear out the screen. Okay. So let's try building that and see how that goes. Success is always a good place to start from. All right, so F5. Now, let's try and run this extension and see where we go. We're again opening up inside of our experimental instance, so we're safe from our development environment. I'm going to open up that VS package sample solution that I had open earlier. I'm going to try moving around my code, and I'm no longer doing that web service call that I was doing earlier. I can freely move throughout the code. But I can select a particular element or word inside of my editor. I can go to the tools options, or go to tools, and I have a new menu command, my find samples. This is now actually doing the web service call for me and displaying that UI element rather than doing it each time I have a UI change. Okay, so my sample's working now. I want to deploy and update version 2 of my extension out to my users. So to do that, we go back and we grab the latest version of the V6 that we've created. Again, the V6 project did all the packaging for me. So it pulled in this new assembly for me, so I don't have to rebundle it. And I can just take that V6 and copy it back over into my private gallery. Put it into the coding folder, and I'll just replace the one that's already there. Now, the last thing that I need to change is inside of that private inside of that XML file, I need to tell the Atom file that we have a new version of our extension, and this time incremented from version 1 to version 2. Now that I have version 2, let's go into the Extension Manager and see what it tells us. Now, under the Extension Manager, I have a new update that's appearing. It's telling me that based on the version that you have installed was 1.0, there's a 2.0 version that's available online. Updating this extension would then go ahead and install and publish the update into Visual Studio for me. And now I have the latest version of my extension. Now, you get the update notifications that appear both in the Extension Manager, but we've also added a new feature in VS to give you toast notifications inside of Windows about whenever there is an update available online. So about once every 24 hours, Visual Studio will go out and check to see if there's any updates for any extensions that you currently have installed. And if it does, it'll show a little pop-up in the lower right corner to tell you that there are new extensions installed. But if you clear that update notification, we won't nag you again until the next time there is a different update for a new extension. And if you ever want to see the latest updates, you just go to the Tools Extension Manager to see the latest updates that are available. Okay, so what did we do here? Let's take a review. We created a new extension for Visual Studio. This extension put some UI onto the editor surface. We used the SDK to create that MEF component as an editor extension. That UI put a list box onto our screen that we were able to do a search online using the Extension Manager services. We then shipped that extension out to our users using the private gallery, or we could have published it online. We then upgraded our extension and moved some of the functionality into its own VS package to do a menu command call to actually query for those sample services. And we published that update out to our users, again using the private gallery. OK, so you have your working extension now, and you're asking yourself, where can I ship this extension? What's going to be supported? I get this question a lot. Which versions of Visual Studio support extensions? Well, it gets a little confusing in our message sometimes, and we say sometimes Express doesn't support any types of extensions, but there are actually a class of extensions that Express does support. And I usually break them up into two basic categories, into the idea of content extensions versus capability extensions. Content extensions are things that provide things like templates, project and item templates, controls, your NuGets, as well as the new Windows 8 extension SDKs can all be built and deployed and extended in the Express editions of Visual Studio. When you have capability extensions, or things like the ones we built today, an editor extension, new UI within the shell, or other capabilities for Visual Studio, those extensions work in the Pro, Premium, or Ultimate versions of Visual Studio. They also ship and work inside of what's called the Visual Studio shell, which is a basic container of the Visual Studio IDE that allows you to package up more robust extensions and ship them to users that may not have Visual Studio installed, but you want to give them a rich IDE environment to work within. Now, once you have that fame and fortune idea that you want to ship out to all of your customers, we have a program called the Visa program that's there for partners that are building extensions and have a business built around extensibility. It's through this program that if you've already started to use Visual Studio 2012 and you use already some of the popular extensions from 2010, you've probably found that folks like ReSharper, Telerik, Component One, all of them already have working versions of their tools working inside of Visual Studio 2012. And they've had them as early as the beta version of Visual Studio. And that's because we work very closely with all the members of our VSIP program to help them get ready for the latest version of Visual Studio. We have a bunch of technical sessions where we share early and interesting content about the emerging technologies for Visual Studio so that they can prepare their extensions for the latest version. We also have a bunch of marketing benefits to help them be more successful and market their extensions to users. Now, this may sound like a lot of great value for our partners, but it actually provides value to the ecosystem as well. Because through these partners, we actually use them as a testbed for getting some really rich and complex real-world extensions that we use internally to test and see whether or not we're breaking compatibility in VS and try and strike a balance between maintaining compatibility and new features that we add into the IDE. So as you go off and you start to think about building your own extensions, there's a couple resources that are common places to start and learn about building extensions. First, that prerequisite that you need. The Visual Studio SDK can be downloaded from the Microsoft Download Center. And then with that, you can link off to the VSX Download Center, the VSX Learning Resources. We have a dev center specifically around extensibility. It gives you the walkthroughs, videos, a whole bunch of content and learning material around building extensions, and then the library references that has all the API references that are available. The dev tracks have their own set of resources, like the Visual Studio blog, Soma's blog. If you go to the Visual Studio blog, you can actually read more about that samples capability that I demoed here. It's kind of the idea behind my demo. There's a blog post that describes more about how that works if you're interested in it as well. And then TechEd has its own set of resources for all the users, as well as all the content that's available online. All of our sessions get published out onto Channel 9 for you to review later on and download. So with that, thank you for coming. I appreciate your time. I do want to hear any feedback that you have. So I hope the content that we shared today was useful. If you found things that were helpful, please do share them and add them. I do read all of the verbatims. And if you found that there were ways that I could change the session for the future, please share those as well. I'd love to hear about how we can do this better in the future as well. But with that, thank you very much for coming, and I'll be here for any questions that you may have.